Good morning. It's time to read the Mason City Globe Gazette for today, Thursday, December 19th, 2019. I'm Virginia, and my partner at the microphone for the next hour is Mary. We're pleased to be with you. This broadcast is made possible through a partnership between the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service and 97.9 FM KCMR Radio. Here are today's headlines on the front page of the Globe Gazette. Impeached, Trump to go on trial. Hotel Skywalk Dam Project Advance. It's a great way to give back. And Community Christmas Dinner Open. Today's weather. It's going to be partly sunny and not as cold with a high of 33. Tonight it's going to be partly cloudy with a low of 22. For Friday, partly sunny with a high of 36 and a low of 20. Saturday, plenty of sun with a high of 39 and a low of 28. For Sunday, mostly sunny and mild with a high of 43 and a low of 30. And on Monday, mild with high clouds with a high of 43 and a low of 26. Now with the first story, here's Mary.
Impeached, Trump to go on trial. President Donald Trump was impeached by the U.S. House of Representatives Wednesday night, becoming only the third American chief executive to be formally charged under the Constitution's ultimate remedy for high crimes and misdemeanors. The historic vote split along party lines much the way it has divided the nation over the charges that the 45th president abused the power of his office by enlisting a foreign government to investigate a political rival ahead of the 2020 election. The House then approved a second charge, that he obstructed Congress in its investigation. The articles of impeachment, the political equivalent of an indictment, now go to the Senate for trial. If Trump is acquitted by the Republican-led chamber as expected, he would have to run for re-election carrying the enduring mark of his impeachment on his purposefully disruptive presidency. Democrats led Wednesday night's voting, framed in what many said was their duty to protect the Constitution and uphold the nation's system of checks and balances. Republicans stood by their party leader, who has frequently tested the bounds of civic norms. Trump called the whole affair a witch hunt, a hoax, and a sham, and sometimes all three. The trial is expected to begin in January in the Senate, where a vote of two-thirds is necessary for conviction. While Democrats had the majority in the House to impeach Trump, Republicans control the Senate, and few, if any, are expected to diverge from plans to acquit the president ahead of early state election year primary voting. Pelosi, once reluctant to lead the Democrats into a partisan impeachment, now risks her majority and speakership to hold the president accountable. Today we are here to defend democracy for the people, Pelosi said in the opening debate. Trump, who began Wednesday tweeting his anger at the proceedings, scheduled an evening rally in Battle Creek, Michigan. He pumped his fist before an enthusiastic crowd, boasted of tremendous support in the Republican Party, and said, "By the way, it doesn't feel like I'm being impeached." What Pelosi called a sad and solemn moment for the country, coming in the first year that Democrats swept control of the House, unfolded in a caustic, day-long session that showcased the nation's divisions, not only along party lines, but also by region, race, and culture. The House impeachment resolution laid out in stark terms the two articles of impeachment against Trump, stemming from his July phone call when he asked the Ukraine president for a favor to announce it was investigating Democrats ahead of the 2020 election. He also pushed Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky to probe unsubstantiated corruption allegations against Joe Biden, the former vice president and 2020 White House contender. At the time, Zelensky, a young comedian newly elected to politics, was seeking a coveted White House visit to show backing from the U.S. ally as it confronts a hostile Russia at the border. He was also counting on $391 million in military aid, already approved by Congress. The White House delayed the funds, but Trump eventually released the money once Congress intervened. Narrow in scope, but broad in its charge, the resolution said the president betrayed the nation by abusing his high office to enlist a foreign power in corrupting democratic elections, and then by obstructing Congress oversight like no president in U.S. history. President Trump, by such conduct, has demonstrated that he will remain a threat to national security and the Constitution if allowed to remain in office, it said. Republicans argued that Democrats are impeaching Trump because they can't beat him in 2020. This vote is about one thing and one thing only. They hate this president, said Representative Chris Stewart, Republican from Utah. They want to take away my vote and throw it in the trash. But Democrats warn the country cannot wait for the next election to decide whether Trump should remain in office because he has shown a pattern of behavior, particularly toward Russia, and will try to corrupt U.S. elections in 2020. The president and his men plot on, said Chairman Adam Schiff, Democrat from California, of the Intelligence Committee that led the inquiry. The danger persists. The risk is real. The outcome brings the Trump presidency to a milestone moment that has been building almost from the time the New York businessman turned reality TV host unexpectedly won the White House in 2016 amid questions about Russian interference in the U.S. election and the rise of the resistance. Democrats drew from history, the founders, and their own experiences as minorities, women, and some immigrants to the U.S., seeking to honor their oath of office to uphold the Constitution. Representative Lou Correa, Democrat from California, spoke in Spanish, asking God to unite the nation. In America, said Representative Hakeem Jeffries, Democrat from New York, no one is above the law. Republicans aired Trump-style grievances about what Arizona Representative Debbie Lesko called a rigged process. We face this horror because of this map, said Representative Clay Higgins, Republican from Alabama, before a poster of red and blue states. They call this Republican map flyover country. They call us deplorables. They fear our faith. They fear our strength. They fear our unity. They fear our vote. And they fear our president. The political fallout from the vote will reverberate across an already polarized country with divergent views of Trump's July phone call when Trump asked Zelensky to investigate Democrats in the 2016 election, Biden and his son Hunter, who worked on the board of a gas company in the Ukraine while his father was the vice president. Trump has repeatedly implored Americans to read the transcript of the call he said was perfect. But the facts it revealed and those in an anonymous whistleblower's complaint that sparked the probe are largely undisputed. Virginia.
It's a great way to give back. Police bring Christmas to families in need. This is accompanied by a large color photo and the caption reads, Mason City Police Officer Jennifer Sankey accompanies Brittany Relo of Mason City as she shops with her children, Easton 3 and Lenny 1. For more than 20 years, Mason City Police have helped underprivileged children celebrate a happier Christmas. They were at it again on Tuesday night at Walmart. They'll be back out Thursday at Fleet Farm. Officer Jennifer Sankey, president of the Mason City Police Officers Association Unit 18, was out shopping with Brittany Relo and her two children, Easton 3 and Lenny 1. Sankey said the annual event is organized by Unit 18. They collect donations from local businesses and citizens, and this year they also started a Venmo account, which is at MCPDSWAC. Each child receives $100, $30 of which they can spend on a toy, and $70 of which they must spend on necessities like clothing, diapers, etc. The unit gets nominations from officers, school district employees, child care workers, and family members. Families are then chosen at random. It's a great way to give back to the community we serve, Sankey wrote in an email to the Gazette. It's nice to have a positive situation for kids to meet their local police. It can help them feel more comfortable approaching us if something bad happens in the future. Our police volunteers also get a lot out of the event and enjoy seeing the smiles on the kids' faces. Mary?
Hotel Skywalk Dam Project Advance. If Tuesday night's City Council meeting is any indication, 2020 looks to be a busy year for Mason City. During the roughly 45-minute meeting, at least five construction-related projects were approved by the five council members, including a paving program for 2020, dam repair work, and the building of a skywalk as part of the downtown hotel in the ongoing River City Renaissance. According to WHKS Engineering President Fuad Daoud, preliminary designs for the skywalk were approved by the state, and final cost for the project should total about $2.5 million, which makes up a part of the larger $9.12 million being given to Mason City by the state for its downtown reinvestment plan. Daoud shared the final plans would be submitted in the first part of May, and overall construction will last no longer than 6 months. He went on to say that in addition to working with the state, he spent a good deal of time working with members from the board of directors overseeing the Music Man Square, which the skywalk will connect to from the hotel. Mason City Foundation Treasurer John Prebeck then came before the council to say that although the designs had changed, WHKS's design plan is better now for the Music Man Square, in part because it pushes things further north. An ongoing project for city officials that now has contract approval from the council is mitigating on a series of dams along the Winnebago River. The mitigation work for Dam Number 3, which will be done by Beamer Companies out of Fairmont, Minnesota, is receiving grant funding from the state, in part through the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. According to Operations and Maintenance Manager Bill Stangler, the contract for the work comes out about $51,000, which is about $17,000 less than the initial projections. A little more than $38,000 of that money will come from the Iowa DNR. Part of what first spurred on the plan was interest from the DNR in Fish Passage on the Winnebago, which the dam repair will help. Once the other two dams are funded and built, Stangler said that stretch of the river should also be more navigable for kayakers. While discussing the plans with Stangler, Council Member Tama was called the dam a terrific amenity for the city and asked what the current timeline was. Stangler responded that the work is to start in mid to late January and conclude by March. For about the first 3 months of 2019, one of the biggest sources of contention during city council meetings involved paving. Specifically, there was a question about paving in the Central Heights neighborhood and how it would be paid for and who would pay for it. And though there were recommendations for neighborhood residents to petition for the city's 2020 paving program, no residents put in. Two petitions in total were received, according to city engineer Mark Rahm, but those encompass a total of more than 18 properties in two locations. One project would involve paving the alley of the 200 block between 27th and 28th Street Southwest, while the other would see work done near South Carolina Place from 9th Street Northeast to the railroad. According to Rahm, policy requires that petitions for pavement must be signed by at least 50% of the properties abutting the street or alley. These two petitions more than met that threshold. The project is budgeted for up to $50,000 and is being funded through the road use tax and assessments. Virginia.
Community Christmas Dinner Open. Annual event set from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. For many, Christmas means time with loved ones. But for those who won't be traveling to celebrate the holiday with their family or friends, the Mason City Youth Cemental Community Christmas Dinner, may provide an alternative to being alone. It's available to anybody and everybody, said Jeff Taylor, First Congressional United Church of Christ office manager. The annual dinner, which is hosted by local churches, has offered North Iowans a place for good food and companionship on Christmas Day for decades. This year, the dinner will take place from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Wednesday at First Congregational United Church of Christ, which is located at 100 First Street Northeast in Mason City. The meal includes roasted turkey, oven-roasted ham, mashed potatoes and gravy, green beans, coleslaw, cranberry sauce, tea rolls, and apple or pumpkin pie, which will be prepared by congressional volunteers with assistance from Hy-Vee East and Smithfield Foods. Water, lemonade, and coffee will also be available. The church is expecting about 600 people for dinner. We will enjoy having them in our church and welcome them, said Gail Schertz, a member of First Congregational United Church of Christ. The meal, which is free to the public, is made possible thanks to the generosity of area businesses, organizations, and individuals who make monetary and in-kind donations. Dozens of volunteers from area churches and the community will set up, serve, entertain, and clean up the day of the event. It's truly a labor of the community for the community, Schertz said. The dinner rotates locations each year. Last year's event was held at Our Savior's Lutheran Church. For those unable to attend the dinner, a shut-in delivery service will be available during the event. Individuals must call area code 641-423-0105 and leave a message before noon on Monday, December 23rd, to make arrangements. The drop-off and entrance to First Congregational United Church of Christ's Fellowship Hall is the south door. The elevator is available through the alley door. Mary?
Mason City stalker given probation. A Mason City man was found guilty of stalking an aggravated misdemeanor. John Pete, 50, was sentenced to a suspended 2 years of prison with 1 year of probation and a suspended fine of $625. Pete had submitted an Alford plea in early November. In it, he says there may be sufficient evidence for the court to find he is guilty of stalking, so he would like to move on with the sentencing without a trial. He has not admitted to this and taken responsibility for doing stalking, Assistant County Attorney Andrew Olson says. District Associate Judge Adam Sauer gave the same sentence Olson had recommended. Olson had also recommended Pete take a mental health evaluation and following through with any assigned treatment, but since he had already done this, Sauer did not include it. I'm not arguing for prison, Olson said. I don't think that's appropriate. The victim also wanted the no contact order extended another year. After the woman had told him to stop contacting her, Pete had left notes on her car asking her to contact him, drove recklessly through the parking lot at her work, and parked his car down the street from her house so she would have to pass by him when driving to work mid-June, according to the criminal complaint. He also approached her car in the YMCA parking lot and asked her why she wouldn't talk to him, at which point she told him to stop bothering her. He then told her he loved her and wanted to work things out, but when she told him no, he walked to the back of her car, opened the passenger door, looked around the interior, and told her he would see her later, leaving her shaking and crying, according to the criminal complaint. The next day, Pete drove through the parking lot at the victim's workplace, then to her home, pulling into the driveway and honked the horn, despite having been banned from being at her residence by a banning notice served by law enforcement. That same morning, he had sent an email saying, "I can't believe what you did to me. I am done with life. For your information, you have a sexually transmitted disease," and left a broken picture frame with a picture of himself and the woman in front of her residence, according to the criminal complaint. Pete was convicted of third-degree harassment also against her in February. "The biggest problem we have here, Your Honor, is he's just been obsessive," Olson said. "He has failed to leave her alone." In asking for a deferred judgment, which would erase this charge from Pete's record after he completes probation, Richard Tompkins Jr., Pete's attorney, said Pete has taken responsibility for his actions and has gotten an evaluation at Prairie Ridge Integrated Behavioral Health Care and followed through with the treatment. "His primary problem in this, Your Honor, has been alcohol and drinking, and he has taken care of that," Tompkins said. Tompkins said Pete has a good heart and the alcohol has clouded his judgment at the time, but he has since paid for it through the 7 days of jail for the no contact order violation, getting a mental health evaluation, and getting treatment. Pete said he has been sober now for 133 days. Pete will be starting a job in Omaha, Nebraska, and plans to move there Thursday, December 19th, Tompkins said. Pete had been let go from his previous job as a salesman in Mason City because of the stalking charge. Sauer said deferred judgments are usually for someone who makes a one-time mistake or an isolated event. But stalking by nature is a pattern of criminal conduct, not to mention Pete's previous harassment charges. "While you clearly have the support of many people based on the recommendations, and you've clearly taken steps here with regards to your treatment at Prairie Ridge and evaluations, I don't believe that the grace of deferred judgment is appropriate," he said. The victim said she wanted to express hope that Pete gets the help he needs, because things can get turned around very quickly after an episode of drinking. "It is my strong belief that John would benefit from close monitoring and supervision with the Department of Corrections," she said. "Alcohol has played a part in his situation, and I pray that John will find the strength to avoid alcohol." In connection with this case, Pete has also been accused of third-degree harassment and first-degree trespassing. Virginia?
For today's Looking Back, today is Thursday, December 19th, the 353rd day of 2019. There are 12 days left in this year. Today's highlight in history: on December 19th, 1998, President Bill Clinton was impeached by the Republican-controlled House for perjury and obstruction of justice. He was subsequently acquitted by the Senate. On this date, in 1777, during the American Revolutionary War, General George Washington led his army of about 11,000 men to Valley Forge, Pennsylvania, to camp for the winter. In 1946, war broke out in Indochina as troops under Ho Chi Minh launched widespread attacks against the French. In 1950, General Dwight D. Eisenhower was named commander of the military forces of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. In 1960, fire broke out on the hangar deck of the nearly completed aircraft carrier USS Constellation at the New York Naval Shipyard. 50 civilian workers were killed. In 1975, John Paul Stevens was sworn in as an Associate Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court. Mary?
In our preview section today, we'll start with a Christmas sampler, an Iowa Christmas Remembered. A live radio show is returning to the airwaves for a special holiday broadcast this weekend. A Christmas Sampler, an Iowa Christmas Remembered, which was staged and recorded at the Lake Theater in 1988, will air at 2 p.m. Saturday on KCMR Radio 97.9 FM. This original production, written and directed by North Iowan Gregory Schmidt, showcased reenacted pieces of holiday literature, humor, traditional songs, and live radio sound effects. It featured a veteran cast of North Iowans and Minnesotans and spotlighted retiring Mason City music director Cal Folkerts. The presentation of a Christmas sampler wove holiday songs between the theatrical portions. All the cast members and even the theater audience joined in some of the musical production numbers. The following year, in 1989, the spoken word portions of the show aired on Iowa Public Radio's KUNI. The sound engineer for this nostalgic recording was Dennis Higgins, with radio audio effects created by Elizabeth Stadelman. Virginia?
Belmont celebrates holidays with three nights of lights events. Belmont Area Arts Council will present its 2019 Three Nights of Lights, Friday, December 20th through Sunday, December 22nd, at the Jennesim Meacham Memorial Arts Center. The event runs from 5 until 8 p.m. each evening and features decorated trees, a live nativity, wagon ride tours of decorations, music, and refreshments. Admission is free event, but free will offerings will be accepted to help fund future Arts Council projects. Jennesim Meacham Memorial Arts Center is located at 1179 Taylor Avenue in Belmont.
Holiday Market raises money for Worth County Nonprofit. The final day of the Holiday Market fundraiser is Saturday at the Northwood Community Center. The market features numerous gift items under $15 and a selection of used items available for a free will donation. Hours for Saturday are 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Funds raised will benefit the efforts of Worth County Community of Promise, which is the nonprofit organization responsible for maintaining the community center, among other projects. Northwood Community Center is located at 829 Central Avenue.
Free holiday fun at the Mason City YMCA set for Friday. If you've ever wanted to check out what the YMCA has to offer, Friday is your chance. And you'll get some holiday fun thrown in for good measure. The YMCA is hosting an all-day Christmas party. You can try out the facility, play some bingo from 10:30 to 11:30 a.m., or eat cookies and make crafts from 5 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. There will also be an open swim at the same time. Santa will make an appearance from 6 p.m. till 7 p.m., and you can also work off that excitement by using the Wise climbing wall open at that same time. Adults must have a photo ID, and children 5th grade and under must be accompanied by an adult.
Free community Christmas dinner to be held in Clear Lake. Clear Lake area churches are sponsoring a free community Christmas Day dinner at the Galilean Lutheran Church. There will be something for everyone. The festive holiday menu will include ham, baked potatoes, green beans, salads, fresh cut veggies, biscuit or dinner rolls, and pies. and of course, plenty of friends, new and old, to enjoy. Dinner will be served from 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the church, which is located at 4454 255th Street in Clear Lake.
Most famous building in Mason City is decked out for Christmas. The historic Park Inn Hotel is showing off her festive attire, which makes now the perfect time to take a tour. Right on the park, the nonprofit organization which owns the hotel offers guided tours, as well as souvenirs, books, gifts, and artwork showcasing Mason City's rich architectural history. The building, which originally also included a bank and office space, was designed by Frank Lloyd Wright, who also initiated construction. It is the last remaining Wright Hotel in the world. The year of its initial opening inspired the name of the hotel's 1910 Grill, a fine dining restaurant located on the main floor, as well as the 1910 Lounge, located on the lower level. The lounge is also home to a 100-year-old billiards table, which can still be used by guests. Tours are given every Thursday through Sunday. You can visit their website, www.rightonthepark.org, for times and admission prices.
Before we finish the previews, we will go to the remembrances. Today we have Michael Mike Scoville Jr., Charles A. Kapka, Ralph K. Holst, Shirley Ann Groh Holstead, and Judy A. Linehan. Virginia?
Michael Mike Scoville Jr. was born on January 30th, 1962, and passed on December 16th, 2019. Michael Mike Scoville Jr. died Monday, December 16th, 2019, at Mercy Medical Center in Cedar Rapids due to heart complications. Funeral services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Monday, December 23rd, at St. Jude Catholic Church in Cedar Rapids, with Father Mark Murphy presiding. Visitation will be 1 hour before services at the church. A luncheon will follow at the church. Interment will be in Elmwood St. Joseph Cemetery in Mason City, Monday, December 23rd at 3 o'clock p.m., with a graveside prayer service. Mike's full obituary can be read at www.tnfuneralhome.com. Mary?
Charles A. Kapka, 71, of Dowse, passed away on Monday, December 16, 2019, at his home in Dowse. Funeral services for Charles Kapka will be held at 2 p.m. on Friday, December 20th, 2019, at Ewing Funeral Home, 1801 Central Avenue East in Clarion, with Pastor Laurel Meester officiating. Visitation will begin at 12:30 p.m. prior to services at the funeral home on Friday. Ewing Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements.
Ralph K. Holst, age 87 of Forest City, died on Tuesday, December 17th at Westview Care Center in Britt, Iowa. Funeral services will be held on Friday, December 20th at 10:30 a.m. at Emmanuel Lutheran Church, located at 246 South Clark Street in Forest City, with Pastor Rod Hopp officiating. Burial will be in Rose Hill Cemetery in Thompson, with military honors conducted by the Leland VFW Post number 6161. Visitation will be on Thursday, December 19th from 5 until 7 p.m. at Middlestat Funeral Home, which is located at 902 East Main Street in Lake Mills, and will continue 1 hour prior to the service at the church on Friday. You can contact the family with online condolences at www.middlestatfuneralhome.com. Mary?
Shirley Ann Groh Holstead, 91, of Clear Lake, died Tuesday, December 17, 2019, at the IOOF home in Mason City. Per Shirley's wishes, her body has been cremated and a memorial service will be held in the spring. Interment will be at the Sion Lutheran Church Cemetery in Bristol, Iowa. Ward Van Slyke Colonial Chapel, 101 North 4th Street in Clear Lake, is in charge of arrangements.
Judy A. Linehan, age 65 of Clear Lake, died Wednesday, December 18th at Mayo Clinic Hospital Methodist Campus in Rochester, Minnesota. Arrangements are pending at Ward Van Slyke Colonial Chapel, located at 101 North 4th Street in Clear Lake. Mary?
And continuing with our previews for the week, come visit with Santa and his elves in Clear Lake on Saturday. Haven't had a chance to have that all-important chat with Santa before the big day arrives? Here's one of your last chances. Santa will be hanging out with a few of his elves at his house in Clear Lake from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. on Saturday. His temporary home is on the southeast corner of Clear Lake City Park. Look for the Candy Cane Lane. If you want to snap a photo, that will set you back $5. After all, Santa's job isn't easy.
See all the lights at Heritage Park. Once the sun sets and the lights come on, Heritage Park in Forest City takes a whole new look. Holiday Tour of Lights is a festive drive through holiday light show experience for the entire family to enjoy. Volunteers set up thousands of lights to display in artistic fun formations and use the existing museum buildings as well to celebrate the holiday season. Over 5,000 visitors toured the lights in 2018. Admission to see the lights is free, but a goodwill donation is collected at the entrance by volunteers. The park is once again partnering with other nonprofit local groups to organize this event. Any donations will go back into Heritage Park and to the other nonprofit organizations. The park is open through December 24th. Hours are 6 to 9 p.m. Fridays and Saturdays, and 6 to 8 p.m. Sundays.
The Music Man Square's holiday premiere returns this Friday. Christmas songs like Frosty the Snowman, Sleigh Bells, Winter Wonderland, and I'll Be Home for Christmas have been turned into decorated trees along the 1912 streetscape at the Music Man Square in Mason City. The square, located at 308 South Pennsylvania Avenue, features a replica streetscape from the musical of the same name, a museum commemorating the works of composer and Mason City native Meredith Wilson, a gift shop, old-fashioned ice cream parlor, and entry to adjacent restored childhood home of Wilson, which was built in the early 1900s. Those trees and other holiday decor, as well as the staples, are free for your perusal through December. Regular hours of admission are Friday and Saturday from 1 to 5 p.m. Guests may visit the Music Man Square Facebook page for more information.
Virginia? We'll move on to the sports page. Biggs give Clear Lake basketball a boost. This is accompanied by a couple of color photos. The first one has Jalen DeVries passing against Webster City at a game in Clear Lake on Tuesday, December 17th. And the second is Clear Lake's Andrew Formanek drives to the basket in the first half of the Lions basketball game at Mason City on December 9th. Lions have eight players at 6'3" or taller. When the Clear Lake boys basketball team walks into an opposing gym, it's easy to imagine the opposing fans' wide eyes and stunned reactions. Plenty of high school squads have one or two tall guys that they depend on to dominate the boards, but Clear Lake stands above in more ways than one. With eight players standing 6'3" or taller, Clear Lake has plenty of height, and for head coach Jeremy Ainley, it is a big boost for his highly successful program. Any coach would rejoice on the first day of practice when he sees a tall player walk into the gym, and Ainley, has been particularly blessed in that regard. "It's been luck of the draw," Ainley said. "If you're big and athletic, you're going to have a pretty good chance to do some good things for us, the way we're built. We've been fortunate to have some bigger kids. Now we're using them appropriately." A big key for the Lions' success has been their ability to score in the paint and dominate the boards. This season, the team is shooting 31% from three-point territory and 46% from the field in winning four of its five games. Having height and muscle down near the basket is going to be key. Senior Jalen DeVries' 6'3" frame has proven to be a valuable asset near the basket for the Lions. He currently leads the team in total rebounds with 54 and in assists with 34. "It helps a lot down low," DeVries said. "Honestly, just how hard we play really helps. All of us challenge each other to get every single rebound. We just play hard and take pride in that." According to Ainley, while the vertical length helps, the Lions' hard work in practice and in the weight room is what actually separates the team. In addition to height, teams need muscle. "You can have tall kids if they're not strong and athletic. It really does nothing for you," Ainley said. We've got a great lifting program in place for all sports at this school, and it shows when you've got kids out there that are athletic and can do something with a bigger body like that. Senior Andrew Formanek has scored 20-plus points in three straight games and collected a team-high 11 rebounds in the Lions' 69-41 win over Webster City on Tuesday night. He stands 6'6" and sees on a nightly basis how crowds react when the Lions walk into the gym. A lot of teams are afraid of our length, Formanek said. We've got some pretty long wingspans on this team, and it's obviously put some fear in some teams. That helps us get the easy baskets and passes. Defensively, it helps us a lot. A season ago, Clear Lake was one of the most dominant teams in the state. The Lions were undefeated going into the state tournament before suffering a disappointing loss in the state semifinals to Norwalk, followed by a loss to Winterset in the consolation round. From that team, the Lions lost their top scorers in Drew Enke and Tate Storbeck. Both of those losses were substantial, but according to both Ainley and his players, it has showcased the team's ability to adapt to new situations and new roles. Every year, a key player graduates, and a new batch comes in and takes their place. Our system and our culture is kind of in place here, what we do, Ainley said. The joy of our system is that we can adapt in different ways. If we are more perimeter-oriented, we can still do it. That is kind of the way we play. We can tweak it when we want it. With the Lions' 6-point opening game loss to West Fork, the possibility of another undefeated season is gone, but expectations are still very high. You never want to lose a game. We want to try to win every game, Ainley said. Obviously, we're learning and getting there, and the first one was kind of a surprise for us, but it was also a growing moment. We've taken it the right way, we've learned from it, and we're responding. The team's ability to respond and adapt was apparent in the win against Webster City. According to Formanek, the Lions' offense likes to play low and near the basket so that they can get behind the defense and get a better shot at the hoop. With the big bodies on the Lions' side, it makes sense to play on that strength. But when the other team catches on, things have to change. The second half, they started playing lower, Formanek said. We usually play behind them and cut. We had to adapt to that, cut in the middle, find the mid-range shots, and attack the rim. We got the ones we needed. After a loss in a few close games to begin the season, a 28-point win was a good sign for the 4-1 Lions, and an ominous one for the rest of the North Central Conference. The win was the Lions' 27th consecutive NCC victory. It's a big win, and that'll probably scare some of the other opponents in the league, Formanek said. They should know that we're one of the better teams in this league, if not the best. We're here to play and always will be. The Lions will play again on Friday night at St. Edmund. Mary?
Coaching legend Hayden Fry dies at 90. Hayden Fry, a smooth-talking Texan who introduced Iowans to celebratory high porch picnics and reintroduced the University of Iowa football program to success, died Tuesday. The legendary coach, who inherited a program which had not enjoyed a winning record in 18 seasons, and guided the Hawkeyes to 3 Rose Bowl berths during his 20-year tenure, was surrounded by family members when he passed away at the age of 90 in his home state of Texas following a lengthy battle with cancer. His legend will live forever with the people he touched and inspired and the programs he led to create Heights, the Fry family said in a statement announcing his death. Though Hayden was born in Texas, his love for the University of Iowa, his players and coaches, the people of Iowa, and the state of Iowa is well known. Hayden often shared, "I'll always be a Hawkeye." Fry, who won 143 games and guided the Hawkeyes to 3 Rose Bowl berths during his 2 decades as the leader of the Hawkeye program, was already established as a coach when he was introduced on December 9, 1978, as Iowa's new football coach. We have only one place to go, and that's up, Fry said during an introductory news conference. I've taken teams to bowl games and conference championships. I've been around the horn. A native of Eastland, Texas, Fry grew up in Odessa, Texas, where he played quarterback on a high school team, which won the state championship in 1946. He went to play quarterback at Baylor, where he earned a degree. A degree in psychology, something he put to use throughout his coaching career that began at his prep alma mater and included assistant coaching positions at Baylor and Arkansas before he was hired to lead programs at Southern Methodist and North Texas. It was on September 24, 1966, while coaching at SMU, that Fry caught the attention of the nation when he broke the color barrier in the Southwest Conference, making Jerry Lavezas the first black player to compete in the conference when he started him at receiver in a game against Illinois. Fry would later call the decision to give Lavezas a scholarship the best choice I ever made as a coach, something I am more proud of than any championship I was ever a part of winning. At Iowa, Fry shook things up in a different way. He changed the team's uniforms, patterning them after the look of the successful NFL Pittsburgh Steelers. He introduced the Tiger Hawk logo, still in use today, marketing products at stores statewide, and eventually created a bit of controversy when he had the walls of the visitors' locker room at Kinnick Stadium painted pink to create the right kind of mood for visiting teams. More importantly, he instilled a belief in his players that Iowa could win football games. Fry's first two Hawkeye teams made modest improvement, going 5-6 and 4-7 before stunning the Big Ten in 1981. Iowa earned a share of the Big Ten's championship, riding the strength of a strong defense and the leg of an All-American punter, Reggie Roby, to an 8-4 record during the season that concluded with Iowa's first Rose Bowl appearance in 23 years. Iowa football reached new heights under Hayden Fry and has continued that success under Kirk Ferentz, one of the many outstanding coaches who served as a member of his staff, Iowa Director of Athletics Gary Barta said in a statement. Hayden's legacy not only lives on through Iowa football, but also through the coaches and players who had the privilege to be associated with his teams. Hayden represented all that is good in college athletics and did it his way. Iowa athletics and college football has lost a pioneer. Fry coached the Hawkeyes to winning 13 winning seasons in his 20 years as Iowa's head coach, winning Big Ten titles in 1985 and 1990, in addition to sharing the championship in 1981. A College Football Hall of Fame member, Fry finished his Iowa career with a 143-89-6 record before retiring in 1998. He spent much of his retirement in Mesquite, Nevada, before returning to his home state of Texas in 2018 to be closer to family members.
For your prep roundup, West Hancock girls power through for seventh win. The West Hancock girls basketball team put an exclamation point on its 88-18 win against North Iowa on Tuesday. The 7-0 Eagles were unrelenting in the first half, outscoring the Bison 55-11. Junior Rachel Lehrer led scoring with 18 points, followed by Madison Eisenman with 13 and sophomore Kelly, with 12. The Eagles hit 12 three-pointers and made 10 of their 12 free throws. West Hancock will play at Forest City on Friday. North Iowa will play at West Bend Mallard on Thursday.
Hampton Dumont, Cal 44, Humboldt 42. The Bulldogs continue their path of perfection with a close win on Tuesday, going 6-0 for the season. Humboldt set the tone early, outscoring the Hampton Dumont Cal 12-8. But the Bulldogs came back to claim a 2-point lead by the end of the third quarter and holding it for the win. The Bulldogs will play Webster City at home on Friday.
Algona 60, St. Edmund 23. The Algona girls basketball team improved to 4-2 for the season on Tuesday with a sizable win against the Gales. After dominating the first half with a score of 44-14, the Bulldogs' offense slowed in the second half while maintaining its advantage. Senior Abby Holmes led scoring with 17 points, shooting 6 from 11 from the field and hitting 4 of the team's 11 three-pointers. Algona will play Iowa Falls Alden at home Friday.
Osage 69, North Butler 33. The Osage girls basketball team tallied its third win of the season on Tuesday against North Butler. After an even first quarter with a score of 14-14, the Green Devils' offense exploded to widen the gap on the scoreboard, outscoring the Bearcats 55-21 in the next three quarters. Osage will play at Nashua Plainfield on Friday. North Butler will play at Janesville on Thursday.
West Fork 57, Central Springs 28. The West Fork girls basketball team got its third win of the season with a strong performance Tuesday. The Warhawks held the Panthers to single-digit scoring in each quarter while building their lead early. West Fork senior Emily Casper led scoring with 14 points and grabbed 9 rebounds. Sophomore Maddie Hubka tallied 12 steals and 7 assists. Central Springs sophomore Olivia Harms scored 8 points. West Fork will play St. Ansgar at home on Friday. Central Springs will play at Rockford on Friday.
Newman Catholic 59, Rockford 21. The Newman Catholic girls basketball team improved to 4-3 for the season after defeating Rockford on Tuesday. The Knights kept the Rockford offense at bay, holding the Warriors to 13 points in the first half while scoring 44 points for themselves. Senior Kaylin Curley scored 16 points for the Knights. Junior Faith Waddle dominated in the paint, pulling down 12 rebounds. Rockford senior Amber Reams scored 9 points and grabbed 12 rebounds. Newman Catholic will play Northwood Kensett at home on Friday. Rockford will play Central Springs at home on Friday.
North Union 72, Belmont Clemmy 50. The Belmont Clemmy girls basketball team posted its fourth loss of the season on the road on Tuesday. The Broncos stayed within striking distance through the first half, but were outscored 40-23 in the second half. Junior Addison McMurray scored 17 points for the Broncos, hitting 3-for-3 from behind the arc. Belmont Clemmy will play at North Iowa on Friday.
Lake Mills 68, Eagle Grove 42. The Lake Mills girls basketball team improved to 4-2 against Eagle Grove on Tuesday. The Bulldogs held the Eagles to 7 points in both the second and third quarter, countering them with 38 points of their own to build the lead. Jessa Gasteiger led the offense with 22 points, hitting 6 out of 9 from behind the arc and sinking her 4 free throws. Junior Taylor Ingledew had 14 points and sophomore Leah Moen had 12 points. Lake Mills will play at Garner Hayfield Ventura on Friday.
West Hancock 88, North Iowa 18. The West Hancock girls basketball team put an exclamation point on its win against North Iowa Tuesday. The 7-0 Eagles were unrelenting in the first half as it outscored the Bison 55-11. Junior Rachel Lehrer led scoring with 18 points, followed by Madison Eisenman with 13 and sophomore Kennedy Kelly with 12. The Eagles hit 12 three-pointers and made 10 of their 12 free throws. West Hancock will play at Forest City on Friday. North Iowa will play at West Bend Mallard on Thursday.
Bishop Garrigan, 54. Garner Hayfield Ventura, 24. The Bishop Garrigan girls basketball team remains in top form as they improve to 7-0 for the season. The Golden Bears defense was key on Tuesday as it held the Cardinals scoring to single digits in each quarter. Freshman Audi Crooks scored 16 points and grabbed 15 of the team's 40 rebounds. Bishop Garrigan will play at North Union on Friday. Garner Hayfield Ventura will play Lake Mills at home on Friday.
Riceville 40, Janesville 35. The Riceville girls basketball team improved to 5-1 for the season on Tuesday on the road. Junior Bryn Heeman led scoring with 12 points as the Wildcats overcame a 20-13 deficit in the first half to beat Janesville by 5 points. Riceville will play North Tama at home on Friday.
And now we'll turn to boys basketball. Humboldt, 59, Hampton-Dumont-Cal, 45. The Bulldogs tallied their third loss of the season on the road Tuesday. The Bulldogs were in the hole 31-19 by the end of the first half and were unable to close the gap despite outscoring Humboldt in the fourth quarter. Senior Wyatt Sutter led scoring with 18 points and pulled down 8 rebounds. Junior Jordan Severs followed with 13 points. Hampton Dumont Cal will play Webster City at home on Friday.
Algona 46, St. Edmund 40. The Algona boys basketball team stays perfect with a victory on the road on Tuesday. After three quarters, the Bulldogs held a 1-point lead before outscoring the Gales 20-15 to close out the win. Junior Noah Nelson scored 17 points for the Bulldogs, shooting 6-for-9 from the field, hitting 5 three-pointers. Algona will play at Iowa Falls Alden at home on Friday.
Osage 62, North Butler 17. The Osage boys basketball team dominated North Butler on Tuesday on the road to a 6-0 season. The Green Devils defense held the Bearcats to 8 points after the first quarter, keeping them scoreless in the third quarter. Senior Jarrett Sharper led scoring with 14 points. Seniors Ty Krieger and Elijah Bloom each had 9 points. Osage will play at Nashua Plainfield on Friday. North Butler will play at Janesville on Thursday.
West Fork 78, Central Springs 64. The West Fork boys basketball team is 6-0 after defeating Central Springs on the road on Tuesday. The Warhawks led the way most of the game, with the Panthers outscoring them 20-17 in the fourth quarter. Senior Braden Vold scored 13 points for the Warhawks, shooting 6-for-9 from the field. Central Springs senior Trenton Wurgis led all scoring with 25 points, hitting 7 out of 11 free throws and pulling down 6 rebounds. West Fork will play St. Ansgar at home on Friday, and Central Springs will play at Rockford on Friday.
Newman Catholic 62, Rockford 58. The Newman Catholic boys basketball team evens out their record for the season with a victory on the road on Tuesday. The Knights held a 1-point lead after the third quarter and outscored the Warriors 16-13 in the fourth to hold on to the win. Senior Jacob Nelson led the Knights with 15 points, all of which he made from beyond the 3-point arc. Senior Sammy Kratz and freshman Noah Hamilton each grabbed 9 rebounds. Rockford junior Justice Jones led all scoring with 18 points, followed by senior Matt Schubert with 10 points. Newman Catholic will play Northwood Kensett at home on Friday. Rockford will play Central Springs at home on Friday.
Belmont Clemmy 64, North Union 42. The Belmont Clemmy boys basketball team claimed its second win of the season on the road Tuesday. After outscoring North Union in the first three quarters, the Broncos had enough of a cushion to hold off North Union's 18-12 run in the fourth quarter. Junior Jordan Meyer scored 22 points for the Broncos, followed by junior Tristan Yoder with 19 points. Junior Carson Lane grabbed 11 rebounds. Belmont Clemmy will play at North Iowa on Friday.
That brings us to the end of the reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for Thursday, December 19th, 2019. Your readers have been Virginia and Mary. This broadcast has come to you through a partnership between the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service and 97.9 FM KCMR Radio. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of IRIS or KCMR. Thank you for listening and stay tuned for today's reading of the Des Moines Register. You are listening to IRIS, your 24-hour radio reading service. Have a great day.